The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. We got Scott Simmer and Amanda on us on here today. So how's it going, y'all?
Pretty good. Just getting ready to put field trials in the ground. So I know producers are itching to get started, too, for cotton and peanuts, which is the main reason why we're here today. Yeah. Is to talk about some pre-plant considerations, at least for my part, from disease management perspective, and some nematodes, and we might throw in some insects just for Scott's benefit.
Yeah, you know, that just makes me jealous that you didn't do corn stuff, because then your timeline pushes almost to February getting started. You know, I'm kind of like already in the middle of it.
Yeah, we went from extension season where I was Simmer almost every single day to now I haven't. It's the first time I've seen you in like 2 weeks, and it's kind of weird.
It's a good thing we have this podcast,
though. That's right, yeah. All right, so I've got a question for today. It's not quite as good as last week's, but our USDA intended acres report came out on the 31st of March. Today is
April
4th. So you've had plenty of time to get this right.
Okay.
What is going to be our number one cultivated crop in Alabama?
Corn.
I was just at a peanut meeting yesterday, and I know there's a few folks increasing peanuts, but it's probably going to be corn.
I remember like 400,000 acres of corn last year.
No, not of corn. It's about 400,000 acres of cotton.
Cotton, okay. But so, it's not this year for cotton.
I'm proud to say Alabama is a cotton state, and we're staying that way in 25.
There awesome. We go.
So we will be down 10%, but the intended acres for cotton are 360,000. Intended acres for corn is 330,000. That's up 22% from last year. Soybeans are down 14% at 310,000, and then peanuts are up 3% at 195,000. So that brings us to a total of 1,195,000 acres in row crops, or in our main row crops, down 2% from last year.
Okay.
So whether that 2% is, I'm sure, a mixture of neighborhoods and developments, and potentially some land laying out as well. But
just looking at it, that's not a bad number. I feel like anything less than plus minus 5% is not a very.
Yeah, and that number fluctuates from year to year too, right? It's never. I've been doing this for 5 years now, or this is my sixth year, I guess, or fifth. I didn't do the first year because it was already planted when I started. But that number always is somewhere in a 2 to 3% window of plus or minus. So we will again, and of course, another thing, Simmer, we were talking about before, I think last year the intended acres for cotton were 350 and we planted 400,000.
Okay.
So we'll see just how right this is soon, but for now that's what we're intending.
Good to know. I didn't know that our corn, cotton, and soybean acres are that close to each other in a way.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, typically cotton. So cotton's down 10% from last year. Typically, cotton is pretty clearly our number one crop, and then corn and beans kind of flip based on the markets. Which this year, they're not flipping based on the markets, right? Because corn market's not great, and even irrigated corn is going to be tough to pencil out for a lot of people. But anyway, yeah, just proud to say we're still a cotton state in Alabama.
Yeah. All right, Amanda, what's going on in your world?
So just kind of watching the weather outlook right now. I think we're still kind of in chances for more of a wet spring, but warmer temperatures overall. But that doesn't mean we can kind of forget about seedling diseases, especially in cotton, as we start thinking about planting, especially if you plant early.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be more at risk for that if you have soil temperatures that are below, 65 degrees. So I just kind of want producers kind of to start thinking about, the seedling disease complex we have. You know, Alabama gets pretty much everything. We have Pythium, Polybiopsis, Rhizoctonia, as well as Fusarium.
Hang on, I'll stop there.
Yeah.
So that's damping off, Shore shin. What are the other names that non-pathologists call them?
So damping off, pre-emergence. So it's pre-emergence or post-emergence damping off. So it can be before emergence or after emergence. So fusarium can happen even all the way up, you know, and cause fusarium wilt later on in the season. But a lot of your Pythium and Rhizoctonia are more pre-emergent damping off. They can sometimes cause some post-emergence. So if you have pre-emergence damping off, that's where you have that severe stand loss, where you don't see, you know, a lot of cotton seedlings coming up.
What is considered early for us?
Early planting.
Before May 1st or?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Anything before May 1st?
Yeah. Any April planted cotton. Mm-hmm. And maybe the first couple of days of May, but really anything before May 1st, I would consider early for Alabama.
Okay. Yeah.
And part of that challenge with the seedling diseases, they can occur in any combination, in any soil type. So unless you really know which one you had previous years, you know, by soil testing, you know, it's kind of a shot in the dark. So you want to pick really good, high quality treated seed that have more than one active ingredient that can target more than one of those pathogens. So we have a good seedling disease trial up at Tennessee Valley. And there we kind of flip-flop each year whether, you know, Fusarium or Pythium or Rhizoctonia is kind of in the top in that soil type. But overall, what we've seen, if you only have one seed treatment targeting, like Metalaxyl, targeting Pythium, it's not going to perform as well as something that's going to give you more bang for your buck with more, you know, 3 to 4 active ingredients to kind of target all of those.
And these seed companies do a really good job of making it hard to figure out what's on the seed. My dad just retired from, he was 35 years as a seed treatment specialist, and I kid him all the time about how hard they make it to figure out. But I believe if you look at your bag, if you've got basic, which you probably don't, that would have no fungicide. A standard would probably have one fungicide. It might have
maybe two,
but probably one or two. And then if you have the elite, that's where you add multiple fungicides. You've probably got a nematicide on it as well. And then an even higher rate of an insecticide as well. So if you're not sure what you got, go look at your tags or whatever. Look, figure out what base it is, and then, or what treatment code it is. And then there's all those A, B, C, D, E, F, G's on there that tell you what you got. But yeah, so that's something to keep in mind when you're talking about how many fungicides you have, is the bag of seed that you have will tell you.
And part of the older challenge, other challenge too, is that with the basic seed treatment, and sometimes with the standard, it can sometimes be that some of the older chemistries that have been around a little bit longer. But then when you get more to that elite, more premium seed treatment, a lot of it's some of the newer chemistries that, you know, have really good high quality activity.
So the more, I'm an ag engineer, you guys just talk a bunch of stuff, okay? So the more, I know about enough seed treatments, all that, but the more codes or the elite it is, less sprays in the season to manage it, or what does that equate to?
That's a loaded question, Simmer. It just depends on the environment. You know, sometimes I could get by on thrips with the base seed treatment. Sometimes the elite seed treatment's not enough. And diseases, I'm sure, are the exact same. They've got their disease tetrahedron or whatever y'all call it now. It just depends on the environment. But I would say, as a general statement, the better your seed treatment, the less likely you are to need to react to it during the season. You know,
so
and those seed treatments are only going to take you out about 28 days. So once you
get any seed treatment.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to get about 4 weeks, and that starts from the moment of imbibition, imbibe. So when that seed swells and takes in water the first time, that starts your clock.
Okay. So going back to what you were saying, you know, I heard like our cotton seed prices and all that, because there's more and more technology, so they're going higher and higher. So is there, like, your recommendation is more, is it more look at your fields and then match like what you're going to plant in some of those? Because you don't want to maybe like spend money on highest tech seed cost across the whole farm. Is that right?
I mean, that would be ideal, you know, if they can do that. So if you have like an area that you were in cotton, especially last year, mm-hmm. and you saw stand loss and suspected seedling disease. Now, whether or not you got that confirmed, but maybe you saw some signs of rhizoctonia, you know, like some lesions, you know, at the soil line on some of those seedlings. That gives you kind of a hint. Or if you had to replant in the worst case scenario, you know, rotate away from cotton, if you can. If you can't and you have to go back into cotton, you know, it's a commodity price-driven game there. Then select in those, you know, high-risk fields a more high-quality seed treatment.
Gotcha.
Maybe in a more low-risk field, you want to scale back. Sometimes an in-furrow spray of Quadris can provide you some extra assurance, but again, that's an additional cost. So unless you're really high, you know, high risk, you know, where you're planting where that soil temperature is below 65, you see in the 5-day forecast, it's going to be, you know, cool and wet. You have areas that maybe collect water, you know, those are all things that kind of can elevate your risk for that. Then maybe, you know, an in-furrow application of, you know, Quadris or Pryax or another in-furrow fungicide can help you. Now, in talking about, you know, with cotton diseases later in the season, you know, those seed treatments aren't going to impact if you're going to get aerolate mildew or target spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're still going to have to, if you have those and if it's high risk, you may still have to do a fungicide later. But the best case scenario, you don't want to have to go replant. That's extra cost for seed inputs as well as, you know, getting someone out there to go plant it or, you know, just fuel for your tractor. So just, yeah, those high risk areas, maybe target that. And if you're going in somewhere where you had peanuts or corn before, you might be more at like lower risk.
Okay. You talked about soil test earlier, mm-hmm. and also I guess now determining the risk to some of this. Mm-hmm. So is soil test the best way to do that, and when?
So the best thing to do if you suspect seedling disease is to collect some soil, and you would actually submit it to the plant diagnostic lab where we can do some soil plating to mm-hmm. determine, you know, whether you have Pythium or Fusarium. I rarely see producers do that. Normally it's just, okay, we saw a lot of stand loss. We saw some symptoms, you know, of one of those pathogens. And so then they just suspect that.
Oh, okay.
So they don't, I think it's a underutilized resource, but it is, you know, we easily pull it out of even infected seedlings. In our research trials and just plating with soil assays. So if you're really concerned about it and have had a lot of issues, the best time is to do it when it's wet and that cotton crop, you're starting to see stand loss because that's showing that those pathogens are active. Probably right now before planting, you've probably gone out, you've disturbed the soil, you know, you've started doing some herbicide applications. So those numbers aren't going to be quite as accurate. And so really it's more when you're seeing disease pressure to select those infected seedlings, and then soil close to the root zone.
Okay.
And so, you know, at this point, seed's been ordered a long time ago, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so in an ideal world, you could say, all right, we're going to plant next week. Let's get this seed. And maybe you could finagle your ordering some to be able to do that, and because you were talking about, you know, that added cost mm-hmm. of
yeah.
the better seed treatment. But at this point, I would say all the decisions are just, should I run something in furrow if mm-hmm. I can, right?
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you have any thoughts or any observations on adding an in furrow to an elite seed treatment or not. You know, I don't know if y'all, I know the Beltwide, all y'all do a really good seed treatment trial on seedling diseases, but there's probably not any in-furrows in that.
So we have another separate one that's not part of that large trial that we look at like 15 treatments. And what we've seen when we've added, you know, an elite seed treatment with Quadris, so exoxystrobin, you don't really see a huge increase in, you know, stand in germination or yield. It's more if you have a lower tier seed treatment.
So how about this? If I've got enough seed of a standard seed treatment and an elite seed treatment to plant the same field, and I feel like I'm going into a situation where there's going to be a lot of seedling disease, better to do the elite or to do the standard with exoxystrobin with it?
We see it better to do with the elite just because you have multiple modes of action in that seed treatment.
Okay, yeah, makes sense.
But, you know, if you're kind of, if you're going into an area that maybe you saw an issue 2 years ago, but you had, say, corn or peanut last year, you could probably get away with, you know, that lower seed treatment and then an exoxystrobin.
See, in the insect world, Simmer, we tend to get a little bit more consistent control from an in-furrow application than we do a seed treatment alone. So that was kind of why I was asking that question.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's what I was thinking, that if you already have more money in a high tech seed,
mm-hmm.
then putting another something in furrow is just more
just
and more.
Just an added, that's right, yeah. Just an added cost, so, yeah.
We see the most benefit with an in-furrow spray, especially if you have, you know, poor germination rates.
Mm-hmm.
We see the most benefit there. But if you're purchasing high quality seed, you know, it should, in theory, right, have pretty good germination. And so that's why we don't see always that added benefit for that cost. But exoxystrobin is pretty cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you could still do it just as extra assurance, but it's not always necessary unless your risk is very, very high.
And in that situation, I would say just don't plant. Let it dry out a little bit, right?
Yeah,
let conditions get better instead of adding that extra cost this year, particularly. I would just wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking from a planter perspective. What are you guys saying? I haven't seen a lot of cotton planters outfitted to do any.
We don't have a lot of people set up for it in the peanut world.
Peanut,
more so,
they're usually
yes.
Yeah, but I mean, you get outside of the peanut world, there's not a lot of in-furrow set up, and that shift started 30 years ago now.
Okay.
You know,
so when we're talking about in-furrow in cotton, let's say, are we talking about on the seed in the furrow, or more like 2x2 to the side, or
no,
something like
that? No, it's on top of the mm-hmm.
on top
on the furrow.
Of the furrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we want to talk about some peanuts too, some considerations for that.
Really for peanuts, the two biggest things before you plant is going to be tomato spotted wilt and nematode pressure. For both of those, you're most at risk. For especially with tomato spotted wilt, if you're planting before May 1st. And so, you know, we always recommend from a disease standpoint to utilize something like Georgia 12Y or another similar variety that has a really good tomato spotted wilt tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not fully resistant. They're still going to get, you know, some, you know, tomato spotted wilt, but it's not going to be severe. Like if you were to plant, say, you know, Flow Runner 331 early.
Mm-hmm.
So 12Y can really withstand a lot of that early, and it has a longer maturity date, so it really fits well in those early planting scenarios. There's other challenges to managing 12Y, which Chris Balcom has talked about on previous podcast episodes.
Yeah.
But, you know, just utilizing those more tolerant varieties early. And then if you're really high risk, this is where Scott could talk a little bit about, you know, in-furrow insecticides in that case.
Yeah, so you got a couple options. They're all, you know, pretty good, honestly. Imidacloprid would be the cheapest. It is going to have the least ability to reduce your tomato spotted wilt virus, could even increase it in some cases according to the label, but as far as reducing thrips injury, it does a good enough job there. AgLogic, very, very good, gives you nematodes as well. Cost a little bit more than a lot more than imidacloprid, but it's very good. You know, I think we've got some varying data sets out there that, you know, sometimes it looks like it can actually help virus, sometimes it looks like it doesn't. And then Thymed is the one, obviously, that's going to have the best ability to reduce tomato spotted wilt virus and, you know, reduce thrips pressure or injury as well, but no nematode action there. Mm-hmm. So part of that might just depend on, can you go liquid, can you go dry, or are you concerned about nematodes at all?
Yeah. So you were talking about variety earlier, like 12Y and stuff like that. Am I right in saying that even Alabama, we're still like Georgia 06, you know? So most of the growers are still planting that. What would be some of the considerations for that if a grower's still going with that one?
So, you know, what we really recommend, and Chris Balcom, our peanut agronomist, recommends too, is kind of try to diversify those varieties across planting dates. So if you want to plant 06G, and a majority of your field's 06G, that's fine. Just don't, I wouldn't recommend planting them, you know, before May 1st. 06G is really great in those like mid planting dates. And then if you're planting later, so kind of mid to late May, you increase your leaf spot risk. So something more like AU17, you know, is a good thing to plant much later. So just diversifying those, you know, across your planting dates. 06G has pretty decent tomato spotted wilt tolerance, but it's still kind of one of those that's kind of in the middle of the pack, closer to 12Y, but nowhere near as good as 12Y. And so that's kind of where we kind of recommend. And majority of our producers don't plant, you know, before May, most of their fields. So it's really easy to, you know, kind of diversify that if you want to plant still a majority of 06G.
Gotcha. What I know Bob Kimrod emphasized so much peanut RX because it's got all these other factors. I guess variety, rotation, few of those things are kind of on the very high top of that.
Yeah, along most with points, tillage practices.
Tillage practice.
And so all that, you know, if you use the peanut RX, so for those of you who haven't utilized it before, just simply Google peanut RX. You can sometimes add UGA, but all of us across you know, the southeastern peanut belt, so to speak, all contribute to that RX guide. Every December we meet in Georgia, look at all of our variety trial data. We have our entomologists look at their insecticide results as well as their variety data across planting dates, and so it's a really good research-based, unbiased resource. And I believe we've added four varieties to the Peanut RX. I know Arnie is one of them. And then the TIFF NVHG, which is looking really good. It has a really nice just overall disease package. So it does pretty well on tomato spotted wilt as well. You know, they always ask, you know, well, what's going to replace 06G? And it's going to be a challenge. But the good thing is we do have a lot more options now. And there's a lot to choose from to help you diversify that. And the other thing about TIFF NVHG, it has good nematode resistance. And so that's the other thing that I want peanut producers to think about. Hopefully they've done their soil testing. The optimal time, regardless if it's cotton or peanut, is really August, you know, kind of to October, towards the end of the season to get your nematode counts. If you have anything that's above for root knot nematode, you know, 250 and above, you really want to consider either crop rotation to bring those numbers down, or plant a resistant variety. So if you still have to go back into peanuts, utilize something like TIFF NVHG, 14N, Georgia 14N, or I don't think there's much seed of it, but 19HP had some nematode resistance, but and TIFF NV Hyalaic also has some nematode resistance. Those are gonna basically serve as a crop rotation.
Yeah.
So in some cases, they may just yield similar to 06G, but they're going to fight that hidden enemy that you can't see and help, you know, keep you in the peanut business longer. We had a research trial in Wiregrass last year where if you looked at our non-treated plots, we had 2,400 root knot nematode counts per 100 cc's of soil, which was pretty high. And we had 06G with, you know, your vellum for nematicides, AgLogic, Vidate. And what we did see is that those reduced maybe nematode populations maybe by about 46%, but you're still above 1,200, so way above that 250 threshold. But then when you utilize one of those resistant varieties, you got to under 100 nematode counts. And so that's going to have a longer term effect on that soil than going in with a susceptible variety like 06G and a nematicide. You know, if you're below that threshold, you know, maybe around 100 in terms of your counts from your soil assay, you could go with 06G and a nematicide, you'll get good yield protection there. But just again, with the cost of everything being a heavy consideration going into this season, if you have those high nematode counts, you already have to buy seed anyway. Just utilize a resistant variety.
And we do have growers this year that are going peanut to peanut, right? And I just remember when you said rotation earlier, agronomic versus economic.
That's
rotation.
Right. Yeah, Marshall Lamb talked about it. That's right.
So that
yep.
kind of makes sense this year, that even though your yield may be lower or something, but it would still be a better, right?
But I feel like this USDA intended acres is probably pretty good for peanuts, and it's only 5,000 acres more, which potentially means we may not be doing a whole bunch of peanut. We may be sticking on our rotations in the peanut world, which would be good if we can do that.
So it's around 190, what you said?
So last year was 190, this year 195.
Okay.
So, but one other point I wanted to make or get your comments on, Amanda, on the peanut RX, is it's not just tomato spotted wilt. It's also white mold, maybe the leaf spots.
Yes.
There's several diseases. And if you look at it, Simmer, there's like 12 different things that affect your score. But really only like two of them we can do anything about. Planting date and variety, because it's twin row versus single row. Well, you're not going to change that up this year. Tillage, no tillage. If you're no-till, you're not going to go buy a plow. Planting date, and we've talked a lot about planting dates this morning because how important that is for seedling diseases. But planting date can also, apparently, Amanda, can also impact late leaf spot or white mold later in the season than peanuts.
So that's the challenge, right? There's no perfect planting date, unfortunately, that'll, you know, cover all your problems. So what's nice about the Peanut RX, it'll give you your risk points for each disease separate. So you'll have a calendar of planting dates for tomato spotted wilt based on your selections, white mold, or stem rot, depending on who's listening and what part of the peanut area you're in, and then leaf spot diseases. And so that includes early and late leaf spot. We consider that both in that. And so in those later planting dates, you may have lower risk for tomato spotted wilt and white mold, but then your risk for leaf spot increases dramatically. And that's mainly because if you think about when are the plants going to be maturing? At what stage are they going to be? Potentially when those diseases come in. So with leaf spot, if you plant late, they're going to be younger, you know, when you start to see leaf spot maybe in July or August. And so you get more risk for a premature defoliation and yield loss.
That's pretty interesting. You're talking about leaf spot when we're doing a lot of fungicide nozzle by volume stuff. We had check plots in there. That was one thing, so visual. Especially late in the season, around 90-100 days, when it just starts defoliating, you know it's something pretty real. You know, you visually see it.
Well, Amanda, anything else we need to cover here before we wrap it up?
I think we got the main things. I mean, I would just say assess your planting dates. Keep an eye on those 5-day forecasts. If there's a lot of rain, just don't plant your cotton in that 5-day forecast. You know, try and wait it out a little bit. So just try to be as smart as you can and do the best that you can. But we're always here if anyone needs any help to assess any of that as we go through the season.
And we've just started. Maybe this is a good place to plug our new Facebook page. Yeah. Due to people retiring, leaving, et cetera, we lost access to our old Facebook page. So we've started a new one, Alabama Row Crops. So if you're on Facebook and you're looking for some timely information, that's in addition to the extension website. We'll also be putting stuff there that you'll see when you're scrolling. So give that a like or a follow or whatever the proper terminology is for Facebook. I just got on it. But anyway, we'll be putting out information there throughout the year. So with that, I guess we'll log off. Enjoyed it this morning, guys. And as always, we appreciate our listeners. And if there's anything we need to talk about or you'd like to come on the podcast, just let us know. But be looking for another episode soon.
And happy planting.
And happy planting.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.